This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk about a boogie woogie, and I'm going to play one.
I'm Steve Vincent.
I'm Paul Schultz.
And this is the Don't Panic Radio Show. Sit back, relax, and ignore the news. Nothing you're about to hear is true.
Now here's something we hope you'll really like.
Hey everybody, this is part two of a two-part series on a book I recently read called Choose Yourself by James Altucher. If you haven't heard part one, don't panic. Just listen to this one. It doesn't matter, like, at all.
You know how you can tell this is part two?
No, how?
Because this time, it's personal.
Love it.
What's shaking?
not a lot since last time we recorded.
I know. It seems like nothing's happened since the last time we recorded.
I refreshed my beverage and put the leftovers in the fridge.
All right. So here's the deal. And at the risk of repeating myself, here's a brief history of our lives. Generation X. Brief history of Generation X, right? Our parents either survived the Depression or were raised by people who survived the Depression.
Right.
Then there was World War II. Then a whole bunch of people came back from World War II, got jobs, lived the so-called American dream, got their picket fence, bought their house, went into debt because they bought their house, used their credit cards, which was a fantastic invention of the second half of the 20th century.
For somebody.
To build the picket fence, to put in the bigger furnace, to buy the, then they went out and borrowed money to buy a car, and then they used their credit cards to get their kids better clothes for school so their kids could, you know, look better in school. Then they got themselves better clothes. Then they got the better appliances. And then they got the, it goes on and on, right?
Don't forget the in-ground pool.
Don't forget. How could I forget the in-ground pool? Right. And everybody went into debt to do this. Okay. Maybe I skipped ahead a little bit, because before everybody went into debt, people worked their ass off. And maybe they could afford it, maybe they couldn't. But what they learned was the secret to a happy life and to a fulfilled life was to stay in school, get good grades, go to college, graduate from college, get a good job, good paying job with a pension and benefits. Life insurance, 401k, or maybe whatever they call it in the corporate world, right? And the corporation will take care of you, especially if you went to college, especially if the collar that happens to be on the shirt that you wear happens to be white. Right? Even better if you happen to be white.
Yeah.
So that's what we learned, right? And the first inkling that there may be trouble in paradise was the 80s when the word downsizing became popular.
Yeah.
And layoffs started to include those white collar people.
Okay.
Everybody's like, "Ooh, what's going on here?" But the 90s happened. And the internet was, Al Gore invents the internet. And then the World Wide Web comes along. And the next thing you know, everybody's doing great, right? So again, going to college seems to have been the right move, right? You go to college, you get a job. I mean, it's not like necessarily up at the factory, right? At Ford or GM or whatever. But, you know, there's all these technology jobs now to build the internet, right? And then that bubble burst.
Who saw that coming?
I remember sitting in an airport with a buddy. Like, he and I were doing, I was a chemical engineer, he was a mechanical engineer. We were both at a chemical plant in New Jersey doing a project. And I remember sitting in an airport going, what kind of suckers are we? Why aren't we like doing a .com thing or whatever? What are we doing chemical engineering stuff, you know? And he's like, I don't understand. Everybody's saying this is the new economy and like this is the new way. He's like, I don't understand. At some point, somebody's got to make money. Like these companies can't, like you can't just continue to have an economy based on stock prices.
Yeah.
There's got to be real money made somewhere at some point. It was like 6 months later, the whole bubble bursts and all these tons of layoffs, tons of whatever, uncertainty, whatever. But anyway, so then 9/11 happens and recession happens, but then things start to improve again, right? Government pumps a bunch of money into the economy and everybody's like back on the let's own a home bandwagon. Next thing you know, everybody's buying houses. Many people are buying houses that they can't afford.
Mm-hmm.
But who cares? Because you can bundle these things up and make it a good investment for people, even if some people who can't afford them bought them. But that's okay because enough people can afford it that you can still make money, right?
Yeah.
Then 2008 happens. And a ton of people lost a ton of money, right?
That was a dude. That was yeah.
But the government was there to help everybody out, right? And I'm not trying to be political right now. In fact, James Altucher, the author of the book, said he cares zero. He has zero opinions when it comes to politics. He says he just doesn't care about politics.
Well, knowing you the way I do and how you feel about the government helping anything out, I know you're not trying to be political.
Yeah, so I'm not trying to be political at all. But the government did pump a bunch of money into the system. If they hadn't, by the way, who knows what would have happened? Could have been a disaster, right? Could have been like whatever. Who knows what would have happened? Doesn't matter. What matters is they did pump a bunch of money into the system. The idea being that money would kind of trickle out to everybody. Like the rich people would get the money, rich people would pump it into the economy, and people would get jobs and wages would go up and everybody would benefit, right?
Because that works every time.
Right. We never learn lessons from the past, right? Instead, of course, as we all know, the money went into the system and it went as bonuses to executives and it went into people's bank accounts and the money went into the system. And of course, the stock market went up, but nobody's salary is going up, right? The reason this book resonates with me if I had read it in 2008, first of all, I'd have been a time traveler because it was written in 2013. But had it been written in 2008, it would have predicted what ended up happening for me personally, which is I haven't gotten a raise in 12, 13 years. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm making today, well, less than I was making this time in 2006. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is that everybody's job is being commoditized. Everybody's white collar job, job job at the big corporation. Everybody at the big corporation is trying to figure out how to make sure they don't have to pay people more. Right.
Right.
Whatever they need to do, whatever it is, better benefits, more more paid leave when you have a baby, you know, foosball table in the break room, whatever it is. The last thing they want to do is pay people more.
Right.
And the first, and companies are going more and more to multinational corporations with investors and public companies. These corporations don't give a shit about you, the worker, the employee, right?
Mm-hmm.
If there's a line out the door of people that can do exactly what you do, there's no such thing as job security.
Nope.
Unless you're willing to take less money.
Yeah.
Or unless you're willing to take no raises, right? So the last couple of years, I love to blame it on getting sued, right? And we all know I have this lawsuit that's still not resolved. People sued us that we sold our house to. But in reality, the amount that we owe the lawyers and the amount that whatever is going on with this lawsuit, those aren't the root of the problem. The root of the problem is I'm making the same amount of money I did back then in 2006, but inflation has continued. My kids are now going to private school, and they weren't then because one of them wasn't even born. The other one was 1 year old. You know, we got this house that we borrowed all this money to buy, right? So all of our expenses go up. My pay has not moved. So no wonder we're broke. And no wonder I posted on Facebook the other day, hey, I'm looking for a way to make more money, right? Of course I need to make more money because our expenses are going up and my pay is not going up. Guess what? I'm like everybody else in that I have one source of income.
Mm-hmm.
I love to tell people, hey, man, I'm an independent consultant. I went independent years ago, never looked back. I don't have a boss. I don't, whatever. It's like, okay, hotshot, how many sources of income do you have? I have one. And if tomorrow that source of income decides, there's like one or two people who could decide tomorrow that they don't like the job I'm doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my life is turned upside down. So I'm depending on these one or two people to choose me as the person to do the thing they need done that causes me to get paid.
Right.
So, okay, I'm talking about me and I'm being like vulnerable and like self-deprecating or whatever. But guess what? It's everybody else that has a corporate job as well.
Uh-huh.
If you have a corporate job, there's like one or two people who can decide tomorrow to just cut it off, right? Or if you're trying to get a job and you're interviewing for jobs, you're answering ads on monster.com or ZipRecruiter or whatever, you're depending on somebody to pick you. Hey, please choose me, right? So this book that I'm talking about, this James Altucher book, is, and the reason it's called Choose Yourself, is he's basically saying we're in an era now, we're in an economy where you can't depend on somebody else picking you. If what you want is freedom and happiness, and we're not even talking about being rich. We're talking about just freedom and happiness and contentment, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got to choose yourself. So I read that and I'm like, well, shit. So what does that mean for me personally, right? And for me, and one of the really popular search terms, like one of the most, it's not the most popular search term, but it's like the fastest growing on LinkedIn right now is side hustle.
Yeah.
Everybody, like suddenly it's like those damn electric scooters that you get an app for and you pay like a dollar to like ride that stupid electric scooter around town. It's like on Friday, there were no electric scooters. On Monday, there's a million electric scooters and everybody's riding them around town. Side hustle's like that. Like, a week ago, I didn't even know what that term meant. Now, everywhere I look, everybody's talking about side hustle. I'm like, shit, what's that?
So you went to urbandictionary.com and...
Turns out that you probably could make money doing it if, you know, if you're a hooker or a gigolo. Remember when, I don't know if this is true, if you're a woman and you're a prostitute, you're a hooker. If you're a man and a prostitute, you're a gigolo. Is that still true? Or could a man be a hooker?
Just because a man wants to dress up fancy.
Dance on a corner next to some whores, you automatically think he hooking? Yeah. So I don't know what this all means for me, but side hustle wise, I did post on Facebook that I think that I thought it might be go to freelancer.com and see if there's anything I can do. Turns out there's nothing I can do as well as or for as little money as people in India are willing to do.
Yeah, that's a yes.
If you're sitting in India and $10 is like, you know, 2 months' salary, you'd be like, shit, yeah, I'll work for 5 hours for $10. Yeah, why not?
And it doesn't help. There's like a billion of them. Right? So.
Who else is on our side? I mean, 800 million screaming Chinamen. Last I heard, there was a billion screaming Chinamen. There were. I love Red Dawn quotes.
Yeah, that's another one of those movies.
So where does that bring us? That brings us to the side hustle. So I've got a couple. So, okay, so going back to last week, hopefully y'all listened to last week's episode, but if you didn't, one of the things that I just absolutely have fallen in love with, well, there are two things I've fallen in love with. One's from the book, and it is get some waiter pads and write down 10 ideas a day. If you can't think of 10 ideas, write 20. Right. And I've been doing it for 3 or 4 days, and I just love it. I'm loving these ideas. That's where that Martian story idea came from, because today's was 10 books I could write was my 10 ideas.
Hmm.
Right? So it's not just 10 ideas on how to make money or 10 ideas for businesses or anything like that. It's just like 10 things, 10 ideas.
Well, I had a really good creative writing teacher a long time ago, and one of the things he said was, even if you have nothing to write, write that, because you have to get through all the crap to get to the good ideas.
Yeah, and I think that's part of, I think there have been studies that show you have to write it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's absolutely, you have to speak it, you know, think it, speak it, and write it, you know, to make it an actual physical thing.
I thought about like using my blog and just going, I'll just put 10 ideas on my blog. But there are two things wrong with that. One is it's not physically writing, and there's a brain connection.
Yes. Yes.
The
there
hand
is
or something when you physically write.
Mm-hmm.
The other problem with that is I would be too like in my head about people are going to read this. I'm putting this out into the universe. People are going to see it. Right.
Yeah.
That's not the, you throw them away. You write the 10 ideas down and throw them away. And people go, well, what if one of them was a good idea? And you go, good ideas have a tendency to keep coming back.
Yes.
And he says this in the book. He's like, no, throw them away. Save them if you want to. If you think that maybe at some later date you'll want to go look at them in case it gives you other ideas. But the fact is, if you write down a good idea, you're going to remember it tomorrow, a week from now, 2 weeks from now. That's just how the brain works.
Yeah.
The brain's going to form a connection somewhere in there that says, ooh, that was kind of a good idea. I kind of like that Martian idea.
Yeah, I thought about it all day. I've actually got notes on it. I'll have to send them to you.
Nice, nice. Yeah, so I sent Paul this idea, which was one of my 10 ideas for books I could write. And it was, what if we, like, I don't know, at some point in the distant future, or not so distant future, decided to terraform Mars so we could colonize it. And somehow we either screw it up, or maybe there's some nefarious like supervillain that figures out a way to alter the terraforming in such a way that gives the Martian colonists superpowers. I don't know whether it's like something in the water or somehow some way that the air interacts with the Martian atmosphere or the somehow the Martian soil, the way that we terraform it, like the way it interacts together, alters the DNA of the colonists so that they have superpowers, right? Maybe even it's sort of like Krypton, you know, in the way that Krypton was, they didn't have superpowers on Krypton. It's just right. Like this is how everybody is, right? Right. You put a person from Krypton, whatever Krypton people are called,
Kryptonian.
You put a Kryptonian on Earth, and they have superpowers, right? Mm-hmm. It'd be a similar sort of thing. You don't have superpowers on Mars. You're just regular. It's how everybody is.
Yeah.
Right. But you come visit Earth, you have superpowers, and then there would be this like half of them are trying to take over Earth. The other half are trying to save Earth. And maybe you could even introduce like, well, let's terraform Venus, you know, and like somehow there's some other superpowers that happen there. It's just like a whole universe, you mm-hmm. know, thing. And if that's a good idea, I imagine I will continue. There's no if about it. When I'm writing my ideas down a year from now, that one might come back up. Anyway, so what's the purpose of all this? The purpose of all this is saying, I'm calling it a side hustle because one of the things I'm trying to do is get my daughters, mainly my eighth grader, because she's at that age. She's mm-hmm. trying to figure out all this. Like she would like to have more money to buy certain things for herself. She gets an allowance, but
yeah,
what 13-year-old doesn't want more money, right?
Right.
To do whatever. go to concerts or whatever that she'd like to do that we're not going to pay for that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm giving her ideas on what she could do. My ulterior motive, you know, is of course to get her thinking in this mode of the world doesn't work that way anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going to tell you go to college and you'll get a good job and you'll be set. Right. I'm going to tell you the most important skill you can have is figuring out how to reinvent yourself every few years to take advantage of whatever's going on at the time, right?
Right.
And so that, you know, that's where I am right now is I'm like, shit. When I, you know, so I graduated from Rose Hulman with a degree in chemical engineering, and I did chemical engineering for a few years. And then I went up and did it some more up in Chicago, and then I got into like management, like supervision and stuff. And I was like, I don't like this. I've got to figure out something else. So I learned project management. Mm-hmm. I learned how to manage projects. And then I said, I don't like managing projects at chemical plants. So I got to figure out how to manage projects somewhere else. And I learned some IT project management. That's kind of where it ended. And when I look at it and go, I'm making the same amount of money I did in 2006. I'm like, well, no shit. I haven't reinvented myself since 2006. 2006 was about the last time that I really did something truly different with my career.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh, well, you know, that's a long time ago. That's like 12 years ago, right?
Yeah, at our age, it's either, you know, 2 years ago or 12 years ago.
Right.
But they're interchangeable.
So no wonder I'm making the same amount of money. You think I'm going to find somebody to pay me more money to do the same thing I was doing 12 years ago? So I'm at this point in my life where, oh, it's time to reinvent myself again. So I'm like looking around going, okay, well, what does that mean? So this is just one of the books. This is just like the most recent book I've read.
Mm-hmm.
To look into that. Like, what does that mean? So I love the suggestions that I've gotten on Facebook. There are some good ones.
Yeah. I hope after I posted the Magic Mike stuff, I'm like, I hope I didn't just sabotage his comment section.
No, you know, what's funny is I really didn't expect to get comments on that one.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't looking for people to give me advice on what my side hustle should be. I was just kind of like wanting to put that out there. Like, here's what's going on with me right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that there are tons of people wanting to give advice. Mm-hmm. Anna, by the way, Anna, who is the inventor of the eyebrows,
mm-hmm.
and who I had a long conversation with about what it's like to be a hot man and how I need to behave as a hot man, is a little bit pissed off with me right now. Because she's like, I'm not going to be your life coach anymore if you're not going to listen to me. So dry your eyes, put the eyebrows on, get out there and do the big and tall man dancing.
The big and tall man dancing.
It's one of the things we came up with. It's like, you know, you got these big and tall man stores, and then like, what about big and tall man dancing? That could be a thing.
And the ceilings in them places would have to be just like cathedrals. Because the pole would be about as big around as an oatmeal box, you know. Just to hold you guys up there.
I was thinking, you know, my whole adult life, I've thought there's a niche for everything, right? Mm-hmm. There's a newsletter, there's a magazine, there's a website now devoted to every single fetish you could think of. There mm-hmm. has got to be a 50-year-old man with sort of a beer gut, 6'5", 280-pound, you know, with kind of a bad haircut. There's got to be people who are into that.
Yeah, I'm sure there are. I don't know if you want to dance for them, though.
True. So here's my other side hustle idea. This is the one in show prep that I said save it for the show. Is we now have our production company on the Life Science Effect putting together the guest list, and they're starting to reach out to guests and book like interviews, right? Mm-hmm. And this kind of combines a few ideas that I had already talked about back in the spring when the show was still going in full swing. By the way, we're getting ready to relaunch. Mm-hmm. And my thought was, why not? Why can't that be the side hustle?
Dude, this is the...
No, I know it sounds obvious, right? I know it sounds obvious. It's like, well, okay. Why wouldn't that be the first thing you think of? I get that. But but the mental block that I've had is, well, because it's not built yet. It's kind of like saying, I'm going to build this building. And then I'm going to rent it out, you know, to people. Mm-hmm. I'm going to build an apartment building. I'm going to rent it out. Well, you're not going to make money until you start renting it out. Well, podcasts can be different because once we get this guest list put together, and it's mm-hmm. like we get these guests booked, I could take that. That's an asset. I can take that guest list to mm-hmm. people and mm-hmm. go, here's my guest list. Mm-hmm. How would you like, you know, to sponsor this?
Right.
We haven't recorded these yet, so you still have an opportunity to get your name in front of these guests. Well, how many listeners do you have? Well, I don't know yet, but I do know these guests are going to listen. I do know these guests are going to share it with their networks. Right? So, another thought I had. Because my, you know, one of the problems I've had in thinking of a side hustle has been, I want to make money now because I need some money now. Right?
That's the short con, man. You got to think long con.
But there could be a short and a long con.
Well, yeah, you want to get them both going, like, you know.
The short con could be take the guest list to people and go, how would you like to pony up some money now to get in on the ground floor mm-hmm. of this thing based on these guests is going to be huge, right?
Yeah.
And the long con is once we get tons of listeners, or the guest list is going to be so good that we're going to get consulting business off of it. So anyway, so that, you know, one of the things, another thing we're doing is the, and this is one that's starting to, it's a seed I planted that is starting to take root with my eighth grader. We went to a wholesale warehouse the other day just to see mm-hmm. what they had. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they have a ton of stuff, but most of it is you can't, it's sort of like Storage Wars. You can't really see everything in the box.
Yeah.
It's a big box, but you can't really see everything, but they'll tell you the kinds of things that are in there.
What's in the box?
But they do have a retail section where you know exactly what you're buying, but everything's like a fifth of the price that they're selling it for on Amazon, right? And so she's sitting there tonight. She comes to me. She's like, look at this. She's showing me on Amazon. She's like, I bought this for $2.50 at the warehouse, and they're selling it for $10 here on Amazon. She's like, I could sell it for $8.
You know? Yeah, there you go.
Now you're starting to catch on.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's why. I mean, I do the same thing with my oldest, and even my youngest now is like, if the internet would have existed when we were their age, the things that we could have come up with once we got done looking at every single porno site on there, what the things we would have came up with. We would not be having this. Our entire life would be a side hustle.
Yeah.
Because it's right there. And, I mean, I'm learning stuff myself. I'm behind, but I'm catching up fast.
Yeah, me too.
On a lot of this shit. Because there's the sky is the limit. And it's not the, you know, it's not the dot-com bubble thing. It's the sky is the limit. You just have to have enough creativity and enough perseverance and enough willingness to like look at what you're trying to learn and forget what you know, and that's how you learn. I struggled for a long time on a slightly different, you know, note, but still internet related. Like, for instance, right now one of the big things is you know, everybody says print is dead. You know, print is dead. Digital is the way to go. The things like webcomics, for instance. Webcomics are fucking enormous right now. They have the amount of people that read webcomics versus the amount of people that read a physical comic is astronomical. But I had no idea how to do it. So here I am watching videos, reading articles, and none of it is making any sense. And then I went, stop. Think like a 10-year-old. So forget what you know about all the conventional stuff you already know. Go into it not knowing anything, and you absorb that shit like a sponge. They're at that age. I mean, you know, and they have the benefit of being born into it. So you've got to get, you know, that I think is the secret with yours and with mine, is you got to get them thinking outside the box, as cliche as that sounds. And the sad part about it is they already are thinking outside of the box. We're still in the box.
They don't know about the box yet.
Yeah. To them, the box is the internet. To us, the box is a fucking cubicle.
Right. Yeah, well, that's as inspirational as I think we're going to get. So I think that, you know, the message is go out there, come up with your side hustle and your side hustle and your other hustle. And the next thing you know, all you're doing is side hustles, right?
My dad and I have been talking about his business a lot lately because he's in semi-retirement, and he was let go from his job the same year. We moved in 1986, and the very same year that he got this enormous loan to build this house and set up his new, his you know, to expand his business, he got let go. The company closed. So he was over a barrel. So he had to hustle fast. And what he figured out was, don't give the people what they want. Give the people what they need, but give it to them at a price they can afford.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'm 99.9% positive that still holds true to this day.
Sure.
It's just that the selling field is the world now.
Yeah.
And everything is, you know, a little bit of research away.
Right.
I had to get that in there. Sorry.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. Henry Ford said, if he had asked the customers what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse.
That's right.
So, with that, you know, we'll probably drop more words of wisdom in future episodes, but thank you for catching these two in the series. And it was a good book. I'll if you're interested in Audible, you could listen to it for free. I could send you the link. And your first audiobook is free. If you sign up for their free trial, you just have to remember to cancel before they charge your credit card, whatever.
And what was the name of the book and the author again?
It's called Choose Yourself by James Altucher.
Ah.
With that, hey, go to don'tpanicradioshow.com and check out all the show notes, maybe a link to the blog post, link to the book, and whatever other good stuff you can see. Don't forget to share this episode and all other episodes that interest you. And don't forget to tell your friends. Don't forget to subscribe.
That's right.
And don't forget to hashtag put it on the page. For Paul's dad, Harold, and for Paul Schultz, I'm Steve Vinson. And nothing you just heard was true. Just true. Just true. Just true.
That's true.
That's what we keep inside our minds. That's what we keep inside our minds. But it doesn't matter. You're just information. That's what we keep inside our heads.